this year, this is what happened. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. Listen closely with all three of your ears. And if you only have two ears, listen with two ears. If you have an extra ear, use that also, so you listen extra good. Reb Baruch touched the fire to the mitzvah candle, and instead of the mitzvah candle burning like usual, as it usually happens, the fire lifted off of the wick, even though it was on the wick at first, and even though the wick was burning, the fire lifted off of the wick and started to float through the air. And it started to go out the window that was slightly open. It went outside into the dark, because by this time it was almost all dark outside. And it seemed to be traveling down the road until it disappeared. It disappeared because it went somewhere far, far away, and it wasn't so big to begin with, so you couldn't see it. But it was still burning. And everybody's mouths were wide open and their eyes were popping out of their head and they couldn't believe it. Did you see that? Some of them are rubbing their eyes. Hey, maybe we're dreaming. They're pinching themselves. Hey, am I wearing pajamas and am I having a dream? Or am I seeing a real thing? I never saw such a big, special thing like this before happen. No, I'm awake. I don't have pajamas on. I'm in my clothes. I'm in shul. And everybody was very surprised except for one person. You know who wasn't surprised? You want to guess? Reb Baruch was not surprised. He looked like he wasn't surprised. As if he was expecting this to happen. Nobody knew what was happening. What's going to happen now? The candle's not burning. The brachas were said. The candle is not burning. What's going to happen now? Are we going to sing Haner Salalu, even though the candle is not burning? Reb Baruch said, later on, we will come back to the Menorah. And later on, when the candle comes back, then we'll sing Haner Salalu. And Reb Baruch went out of the shul without saying another word. And everybody stood there after Reb Baruch left, of course, wondering and talking. People were talking, what's going on? I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And one person said, I wonder if this got anything to do with Reb Yankel not being here. You think it could? Well, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Two strange things happened. One little strange and one big strange. Reb Yankel's not here. We're worried about him. And the Hanukkah candle disappeared before it really even started to burn. But they said, Reb Baruch said, later on it's going to come back, and then we're going to sing Haner Salalu. Oh boy, that means, Bez is Hashem, we're going to find out what happened. Reb Baruch said, the candle's going to come back. Okay. They decided they're going to go home, light the menorahs, wherever they have to light for the mitzvah, and they're going to hurry back after their half hour with the candles back to shul to wait to see what happens. Reb Baruch also went home to light in his house, because in the shul you don't light for the mitzvah. You're not Yetzi in the shul. You have to go home and light in your house. In shul it's a special inyan to light the menorah, for it's called Pirsumei Nisa, to show everybody that it's Hanukkah. Kinalach, let's go back into the forest to Reb Yankel. It's now night. Reb Yankel is going in the dark, in the forest. He's davening, kinalach, to Hashem. Davening is not just shachris, mincha, and ma'ariv. That's also, of course, davening. But davening is especially when you really need Hashem, you're really in trouble, you daven to Hashem. Doesn't have to be necessarily Shmoneh Esrei or something in the Siddur. You ask Hashem to help you, that's also davening. You are davening, you are asking Hashem to help you from a trouble, that's of course davening. A Hashem hears you at all times. And Rabbi Baruch, I'm sorry, and Rabbi Yankel is davening to Hashem, please, please save me from this forest. I know nobody ever got out alive, and I'm sure if you look closely at my life, I probably also don't deserve to get out of this forest alive. Do it for my family's sake, for my kindlelach, for my wife's sake, that they should have the tati back in their house, and do it for the king of the robbers' sake. It'll help him to do tshuva. Maybe he won't be a king of the robbers anymore. Maybe he'll become a yid who keeps Torah mitzvahs again, like when he was a little kid. Aye, he went off the way. He went in a way that he didn't keep Torah mitzvahs. Maybe it wasn't so much his fault. He didn't know what he was doing. Help him to do tshuva. And he was getting more tired. He was very hungry. Hadn't had anything to eat. It started getting very cold. And he started hearing the voices of the wild animals in the forest at night, and seeing those yellow eyes looking at him from behind the trees. And Kinalach, he felt his koyach is going and going and going. How much longer can this be? And it seemed that he was going for hours, just round and around in circles. Didn't find any road. He didn't find any way that he knew. Just trees and bushes. And he was about ready to fall over. He was so tired. When all of a sudden, he saw, it looked like in the distance, a little light. He thought he saw a little light in the dark, dark forest. And it wasn't just the yellow of the eyes of these wild animals. It looked like a brighter light. Hey, maybe there's a house somewhere far away, and maybe there's a light in the house. You know, they burn candles for lights in the houses. It looked like candlelight somewhere, maybe far away. It's very small. Maybe if I get to that house, then I'll find my way back to Reb Baruch's town. After all, the house, somebody in the house will know where to go. And he went in the direction of the light that he thought he saw. He rubbed his eyes. Maybe I'm dreaming also. No, there's something there. Something very small is there. And he went in the direction of that little light. And usually, Kinalach, if you go in the direction of something small, far away, it's small. As you get closer, it gets a little bit bigger. But this light seemed to say, it seemed to stay small just like before. Nothing was getting bigger. So what's happening? Why am I? How come I'm not getting closer to it? As I'm coming closer, it seems to say the same. Then he saw, it looks like it's moving. It looks like it's moving. It's not, I was going this way, and all of a sudden it's this way. I'm going this way, and it moves a different way. Am I dreaming? What's going on? This is very strange. And then Kinalach, as he was following this light, because that's the only thing that he figured out what he could do, to follow that light, it seemed that the light was moving. And it actually looked like a candle burning. It looked like actually a little fire. That's what it looked like. Nah, it couldn't be, but that's what it looked like. And it was moving. All that Rabbi Yankel knew was that he was going to follow that light. He didn't know why, but that was the only thing that he had to hope for in this forest. The only thing that was happening that was of some hope, that a light is there and he's following it. And it seemed to be leading him in different ways through trees and around bushes and down little valleys and up little places. And after a while he said, yes, there is actually a fire burning there, or something that looks like a fire. It's moving and it seems to be leading me, because it waits until I get to a certain place and then it moves on. And then I follow it to a different place and it moves on, and I seem to be going somewhere now. Before I was going around and around in circles. And now I seem to be going like I'm going somewhere, like I'm leaving the other part of the forest and I'm going to a new part of the forest. In the little bit of light that wasn't the forest, that came from a little bit from the moon, and a little bit from this little light, and a little bit from the fireflies, He seemed to be in a different part of the forest already. And he kept following that little light until finally he came to the road. Look, this is the road. He couldn't believe it. Oh, he thanked Hashem Kinalak from the bottom of his heart. This looks like the road. Yes, it's the road. And he walked on the road, and this little fire was still going, and he followed it. And all of a sudden, he saw the big rock that was outside of Reb Baruch's town. That's the big rock. And look, the little fire is waiting by the rock. Of course, he reached into the pocket, and he pulled out the little handkerchief, the little shmata that the king of the robbers gave him, and he put it under the rock. Of course, not mamish under where it's resting on the ground, but you know, it's a big rock, and you tuck it under over there. And that's it. He put it there. And then, kenalach, the light went on. Now, let's go back from this part of the story into another part of the story, back in the shul of Reb Baruch, where he had lit the menorah. The night had gone on, everybody had gone back to their homes, lighting their menorahs, and they rushed back to the shul, and they're waiting, and they're talking, and they're learning. Of course, they're very excited, when all of a sudden, a very strange thing happened. The door to Reb Baruch's room opened. Look, Reb Baruch is coming out. Everybody was quiet. And at the same time, the little light all of a sudden came to the window and started coming into the shul. Hey, look! The light, it's coming back. The same light, the fire that was from the menorah. There it is. Mamish, the same time that Reb Baruch came out of his room, the light came into the shul. And as Reb Baruch looked up by the menorah, the light went back exactly to the candle and started burning on the wick of the first licht of Hanukkah. And everybody's mouths were open and their eyes were popping out of their head. They were so excited. And then a third thing happened. Look at the door. Look at the door of the shul. Look who's there. Reb Yankel is here. Look. Look, Reb Yankel is here. Hey, Reb Yankel, we got to tell you about what's happening. And Reb Baruch smiled. Reb Yankel came. And he said to Reb Yankel, Reb Yankel, tonight we're going to make a special simcha in the shul. We're going to make a special farbrengen, a latke farbrengen we're going to make in the shul. And you're going to tell your story. Ooh, Reb Yankel's going to tell his story. What about the candle? Hey, somebody said, it must be the same story. This is all happening at once. Reb Yankel's story must be also the candle story. Oh, they got so excited. A latke farbrengen, a big simcha in the shul tonight. And Reb Yankel's going to tell his story. And Reb Baruch said, Reb Yankel, you come with me. Come into my room, rest a little bit, daven ma'ariv, light a menorah, eat a little something, and then you'll be ready to tell everybody your story. That night, kinalach in the shul, they made such a beautiful simcha, they made latkes, and they had mashke to make l'chaim, and everybody was freilich, singing nigunim, and dancing and singing. And then it came time that Reb Baruch and Reb Yankel came out of the room, and Reb Yankel sat next to Reb Baruch at the head table, and everybody was sitting at their tables. They were so excited. We can hardly wait till the story is being told. And Reb Baruch got up and he said, before the story is told, there is someone missing who also should hear the story. Set one more place by the table and put one more chair. And everybody wondered, who's not here? Who's not here? Who's going to come? After all, who's missing? And kinalach, as they set the table and put the chair, and they put a few latkes over there, maybe some sour cream and some applesauce, maybe a few pickles also, all of a sudden, somebody came into the shul by the door that they'd never seen before. You know who it was? Who do you think it was?
The king of the robbers.
The king of the robbers came into the show. And he was holding in his hand. What was he holding in his hand? You know what he was holding in his hand?
The shmata.
He was holding the handkerchief. And he was so surprised. And he saw Reb Yankel up in the front of the show with Reb Baruch. And Reb Baruch smiled at the king of the robbers. And he said, sit down. Have some latkes. Help him with the brachas over there. And you're going to hear a good story. And the king of the robbers sat down. He ate a big pile of latkes. And he heard this story. And he himself was in the story. And he decided it was so wonderful to be in the shul. He stayed on. And he came to Shacharis and Minchin Ma'ariv. And he came to the shiurim. And he took off the robber clothes. And he put on regular clothes, nice Shabbos-dika clothes. And he became a part of the group of Reb Baruch. And he became one of the followers and big Hasidim of Reb Baruch. And he did Shuveh. And of course, what happened to the other? What did you say? The question, what happened to the other robbers? Well, the story doesn't say, but maybe the king of the robbers went out into the forest and he found his friends. Maybe they were Yidden also, maybe not. But he taught them to do tshuva, not to be robbing and stealing. Because even for the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, they're not allowed to rob, not allowed to steal. They also have to keep Hashem's 7 mitzvahs. And of course, I'm sure there was a lot of good things that happened from that big ness of Hanukkah that happened. And that is the story. Okay, this story shows that you never know who's the best. Everybody has something about them that makes them the best. Don't think that somebody is higher, somebody's lower, somebody's better, somebody's worse. If you just be patient and you wait, or you look very closely, everyone has a special thing about them that makes them the best. I'm going to tell you a true story. It was years ago, when I was a bacher, I was in yeshiva, because I saw this with my own eyes. In the summertime, when it was very hot in New York, and it was very sticky and very uncomfortable, so we were very lucky, the yeshiva went up to the country, and they learned in the country. They had a very nice place in the country, where, of course, if you go to the country, you know the weather is nicer, and it's cooler, and it's more comfortable. And so you could learn Torah better. We learned Torah from morning until night in the country. And this is what we did. Now, of course, some Bachrim were very, very good. And they were very smart. And they kept Seder. They could learn very good. And some Bachrim, you know, it wasn't exactly so fantastic the way they learned, the way they davened. And there was one boy, his name was Chaim. I don't want to say his last name. And this Chaim, Kenalach, he pashit could not learn very good, even if he tried. He did not have a good head. And he was very slow. And you tried to explain something to him, he wouldn't understand it. He could read, he could say some tillim, he could daven. When it came to learning, especially Gemara or Chassidus or anything, Pashit, he just did not understand. His head did not work like anybody else's head. And he would sit there, and people were trying to learn, and he would try to learn, and he would not be able to learn very well. And he was also kind of lazy, like sleepy the whole time. And he would speak very slow. Couldn't remember things too well. And he would sit there, and people felt, Nebuch, you know, he's just sitting there, Chaim. And, you know, people felt sorry for him. What can he really do so good? And he was always like the last. The last, that's the way people felt about. He he's the last and the lowest. That's the way people felt. Of course, you try to have Avos Yisrael, but this is the way you feel. Until one day, and I saw this with my own eyes, you see what the Torah says, that everybody has a special thing that no one else has, and that makes them the most special. One day we were learning, it was in the afternoon, and all of a sudden we heard a woman screaming. Real scary screaming, like something terrible was happening. We rushed to the window. And the window, when you looked out of the window, you saw the lawn and you saw the trees. And there was also a house in front by the road. And the people that owned the bungalow colony, actually it was like an old hotel. The people that owned it, they lived in the house by the road. And they took care of the place, and they owned it, and they lived there the whole year. And the woman, who was the mommy of that family, she was screaming in her house. You could hear the screaming all the way to the base medrash where we were learning. And all of a sudden, we saw why she was screaming. It looked like a dark cloud on top of the house, even though it was a sunny day. And what happened was, a hive of bees, like a whole group of bees, had come down on the house. For whatever reason, the bees were flying through the air, thousands and thousands of bees, and for some reason they came down on that house, and there were bushes and flowers and trees around that house, and they were all around. And the woman was inside by herself, and outside were thousands and thousands of bees flying around, and it was very scary. It was very, very frightening. Can you imagine to be in a house by yourself and thousands of bees everywhere? You're afraid to run out. You're going to get stung. You don't want to open up the window. They're going to fly in your house. How do you get rid of them? Nobody knew what to do. What, we should call the police? What are they going to do? All of a sudden, this Bachur Chaim, he got up from his place and he said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." At first we thought, what is he making jokes? This Chaim, this quiet boy, who pashut doesn't have too much seichel, his head does not work too good, he's not ever shown any kind of strength in anything, all of a sudden he gets up when everybody else is afraid, and he says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it. It's no big deal. Bees, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it." What's he going to do? We thought maybe he was making a joke. He says, "Quick, we'll go to the kitchen. I'm going to get a big box and honey." He went to the kitchen. He got a big box. He took honey. There was honey in the kitchen. He poured the honey in the inside of the box and he smeared it. He smeared the honey on the inside of the box. He carried the box over to the house where the bees were, and he was not afraid. He went over to where the bees were. He told everybody that he used to work in a place called an apiary. That's a place where you have bees. Some people take care of bees and they get honey, and they know how to walk around. They know how to walk around and they know how to take care of bees. And this Chaim, he used to work with bees, so he knew about bees. And he wasn't afraid of bees. He took the box and he went close to the bees and he went inside of the cloud of bees and he was not afraid at all. And he went over to a bush and he put down the box in the bush, and the bees, they smelled the honey and they liked the honey and they started flying into the box. Like 10, 20, 30, more and more bees. Now, there was still a lot of bees flying around, and Chaim told everybody that when the queen bee, there's a leader of the bees called the queen bee. As soon as the queen bee will go in, everybody will follow. Now, after a while, you saw that all of the bees went into the box, and it was very, very heavy, but he was strong. And he carried the box full of bees way, way into the woods, and he got like an old cabinet, like a you know, a cabinet you have in your house, and over there he made a hive for those bees. Like, he made a new home, and they lived over there the whole summer until we left. They were there. And he made it. He made the house. Now, during the whole time, he got stung twice. He didn't cry about it. Didn't bother him. Every once in a while, he was used to getting stung by a bee. And the woman inside was so happy that Chaim saved her from the bees. That Shabbos, for dessert, they bought the whole yeshiva parva ice cream. Big, big things of parva ice cream. Like, they made a party, an ice cream party, for the whole yeshiva, and they bought big, big things of ice cream for the whole yeshiva to say how happy they were and to say thank you that Chaim saved her from the bees. And the father came, and the mother came, and the whole family came, and they were so happy. Now, what do you see from this maisa? That everyone, if you just give them a chance and time, is very special. This Chaim, everybody thought he was a real Nebuchadnezzar, and a real nothing, and he couldn't do this, and he couldn't do that. And who was the one that saved the woman from the bees? And Mamish made everybody surprised at what a koyach he has. It was Chaim. And you see, he had something that nobody else had. So you never know who's the highest, you never know who's the lowest, and who's the best, who's the worst. Everybody has something. And what you learn out of this is Avos Yisrael. Never look down on another Jew. Never say, I'm better than him. He's in this and I'm higher. You never know who's higher. You never know who's lower. And Be'emes, everybody is higher and everybody is lower. You have something that your friend doesn't have, and your friend has something about him that you don't have, and yet everybody has to love each yid and never chas shalom.